The FBI confirms one person is dead, another is injured, and several other members of the armed militia, including its leader, Ammon Bundy, are under arrest after shots were fired Tuesday afternoon.
Now, I can tell you, I built the coalition that imposed sanctions on Iran. I know a little bit about how you do this. You don't start by insulting people's religion.
The Federal Reserve is not likely to announce any changes in interest rates as it did in its December meeting for the first time in nearly a decade.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
This is not Steve Grzanich. It's Nick DiGilio. Steve Grzanich is actually running late, so I'm sitting in here.
See, if you hadn't said anything, I don't think anyone would have noticed.
No, they would have noticed once I started talking about business.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, they would have noticed immediately once I started talking about business. Listen, coming up in this segment, though, we are going to talk with real estate. He covers real estate for Cranes. It's Dennis Rodkin, and he's going to tell us about some of the Chicagoland areas and suburbs that have exploded with home sales over the last year. So we're going to talk about that. But before we talk about that, let's bring in the guy who opens the show after 6 o'clock, Mr. Steve Cochran, our one and only buddy. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Good morning, and how are you fellas?
I'm all right.
Great.
Yeah, I'm good.
I hope Mr. Rodkin doesn't mind being ambushed, but Dave and I, being suburban homeowners, we can find out if we got hosed.
Yes. My guess is you did.
You know, it's funny because home price, Dave, I don't know about you because you're north and I'm west, but home price is exploding in my neighborhood for sure.
Yeah, same here.
I don't feel like selling now.
I'm not ready to sell, though.
No. All right. Well, let's bring Dennis in from Cranes, covers real estate. Dennis Rodkin, welcome to the show. I'm Nick.
I Steve. Feel ambushed already.
So,
Dennis. By the way, Dennis, a former Tribune Tower regular.
Yes.
And killing it now at Cranes. So, congratulations, Dennis.
Yeah, I've had Dennis on my show in the past too, which is which is cool. Hey, Dennis, welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Tell us about the home sales exploding in these suburbs. Tell us about that. Where?
Well, the five where sales were up the most in 2015 were Woodridge, Brookfield, Elmwood Park, Inverness, and Palos Heights. And here's how much they were up. For the region in general, home sales were up 6.6% in 2015. In those places, they were up 26 to 36%. So like 5 to 6 times the rate of growth of the rest of the region.
Wow.
And are you seeing people fighting for homes in those areas that are driving prices up, or are there other factors?
This is really just home sales, not driving prices up, but the number of sales. But yes.
Oh, the number of sales. It's not a price. It's not a price statistic. It's actually number of homes moved.
Yeah. So, our market is moving again. We're selling with sales up 6.6%. We had a decent number of sales in the region for 2015. But these places had insane numbers of sales. And one thing they all have in common is what's known as adjacency. Adjacency is back. It used to be before the housing bust that if I was priced out of the really amazing town, I went next door. But then during the down years, I could afford the amazing town. Now we're back to looking at next door, which is not to say that any of these aren't amazing. They're just less expensive than what's nearby. Woodridge, less expensive than Downers Grove and Naperville, that sort of thing. So people are buying the house. They're getting more house for the money when they get to the Woodridge, Brookfield, Elmwood Park, et cetera, and just booming. Sales going nuts. Up 36.6% for the year in Woodridge.
Now, Dennis, how long has it taken for the housing economy to bounce back after the insanity of 2008, 2009?
Well, in Chicago, it is still taking. We haven't fully bounced back. We are the slowest recovering of 20 major cities in the United States. Some data was out yesterday from the Case-Shiller Index showing that, once again, Chicago, of the top 20 cities, is the slowest to recover. Our prices were up in this data is a little bit, it's a little older, but it came out yesterday in November. Home prices in Chicago were up 2% over a year earlier, while in places like Portland, Denver, San Francisco, they were up 11%. We are right at the end of the year. I had some data showing we are one of the least, if not the least, recovered the farthest from the peak still of any major city in America.
Is there a reason for that?
We know that people are leaving Illinois. So who's buying the houses? Have we quantified that?
That's absolutely one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons that home building is down in this area, or is not growing nearly as fast as it is in other regions, because each person who leaves Illinois leaves an empty house, so there's not need necessarily for another new house to be built. Yes, people are leaving Illinois. We have had one of the worst job growth rates in America. We're building jobs now, but we're not catching up to other cities. We have financial instability, which apparently keeps people from committing to coming here. And on the subject of unemployment or employment, we also have one of the highest rates of Black and Latino unemployment. I mean, that's way above just our general population employment. And all of those things are keeping us from recovering like other cities.
Hey, Dennis, before we break here for traffic, I want to ask you very quickly, have you seen the movie 99 Homes, Dennis?
I have not seen. What is that?
99 Homes. Cochran, have you seen it?
Yeah, I have.
Don't you think Dennis would be interested in seeing that movie?
Oh, there's no question. It's an amazing performance about a true to life as done by Hollywood story that I think is getting repeated or has been repeated all over the country.
Okay.
Dennis, how is the...
About my childhood. I lived in 17 homes as a kid. I thought it was maybe about me.
No, no, we can tell you about it at some other time. Dennis, hang on, okay? We want to talk to you a little bit more.
Okay,
Steve,
sure.
Hang on. Dave, hang on. It's Nick DiGilio here just for a couple of more minutes. Steve Grzanich is on his way. It is the opening bell. Let's get a check on traffic. Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Chinese stocks sank again today, but other Asian markets rose after the U.S. Federal Reserve's latest statement on interest rates and the economic outlook. U.S. stocks jumped as the price of oil made another abrupt reversal and rose 4% following a decline on Monday. Toyota holds on to its status as the top-selling automaker in the world. 10 million Toyotas rolled off the assembly line in 2015. Volkswagen AG and General Motors were a close second and third. Over at Apple, an almost unheard-of prediction of a sales decline. The tech giant says revenue may fall 8.5% for the first quarter of this year compared with 2015 numbers. Apple executives call the company's first potential sales drop in 13 years a hiccup. Scandal, bribes, deception. An international watchdog group has issued its Corruption Perceptions Index, finding that the country considered most corrupt is North Korea, while the least corrupt is Denmark. The U.S. rose to number 16 in perceived corruption. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Steve Grzanich is on his way, running a little late this morning, so it's me, Nick DiGilio. I'm your overnight guy, and I'm here just for a few more minutes. Dave Ennett has joined me, and we're in the middle of talking with Crane's Dennis Rodkin, who covers real estate. And Dennis, welcome back, sir.
Thanks. I looked up the movie. It looks great.
Yeah,
99 Homes. I'll look for it this weekend.
Yeah, it's about a guy played by Michael Shannon whose job is to come in and shut down the homes of people who haven't paid, and just take them over, kick the people out of their houses. And Dave, you actually saw it, right?
I actually have not watched it. I need to watch it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it yet.
Andrew Garfield plays a guy. He's a construction worker whose home has been taken away by Michael Shannon, and then works for him.
Right.
To kick people out of their houses. It's a pretty amazing movie. It's pretty good. I think you'd really like it, Dennis.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it, but I'll definitely look for it.
Okay. All right. Now, getting back to the sales explosions, the house sales explosions in the suburbs, Dave had a question as a homeowner and a suburbanite.
Well, and my question really was about the specific five communities you mentioned, Dennis. Obviously, it's one thing for sales to be up, but there also has to be inventory. Is there still inventory in those communities?
You know, they're doing pretty well. There's not the tightness that we have in the city, and they're a little bit looser than the market in general, in part because in places in the two at the top of the list, Woodridge and Brookfield, there was quite a bit of foreclosure in the past, and there also have been a lot of senior citizen owners, longtime owners, both of those kinds of houses being sold to rehabbers, fixed up and put back on the market in better condition and at a higher but still pretty good price. So they're doing pretty well on inventory. You're not going to it's not as tight as it is in other parts of the region.
If you're looking ahead in 2016, what are the hot areas in the real estate market in Chicagoland?
Well, all of those.
Yeah. Those five.
That's a good start.
And in the city, you're really, what we're really seeing is a lot of pressure north or northwest, depending on how you look at it, up Milwaukee Avenue. If you get past the, what I always call the hot zones, the Wicker Park and Bucktown and all that, you just keep going north on Milwaukee Avenue. Irving Park, which always had a lot of activity, is really heating up even more.
That's Dennis. That's where I live. I live in North Irving, or I live in Old Irving Park.
Put your home on the market, mister.
I don't have a home, but I'll do something about it. But I've noticed, I've noticed an increase. I've lived there now for about 5 years, and I've noticed a huge increase in people moving into that area.
Tons of construction right across from Schurz High School. Farther up, there's a lot going on. I mean, I think that in, let's say, 5 years, I'm going to be sitting here telling you the new super hot neighborhood is Jefferson Park, because it just keeps moving all the way up Milwaukee Avenue.
Yeah.
Jefferson Park is pretty nice anyway, but I think, you know, as the restaurants move north and that sort of thing, it's just going to keep working its way. Milwaukee Avenue is like the Clark Street, what Clark Street was in the 70s and 80s, where everything developed along there. Now we're, if you just look at the hands of the clock, we're moving counterclockwise, and it's going up Milwaukee.
Hey, Dennis, hasn't that always kind of been historically the way it's gone, where it goes further west? Like, isn't that, I mean, within the city, and everything gets gentrified near the lake, and then it just spreads and spreads and spreads further west. Is that still the case now?
Yeah, oh yeah. If you go, well, and if you go west of places like Wicker Park and Bucktown, you're also seeing it. If you get Humboldt Park is picking up again. It was trying to go to really pick up before the housing bust. You started seeing a lot of activity in Humboldt Park. And again, this is a factor of adjacency. I couldn't afford Wicker Park. I couldn't afford Bucktown. So I went the next step west. Then during the housing bust, it turned out I could afford Wicker Park and Bucktown because prices came way down. Now that they're going back up, yes, pushing west, Humboldt Park and farther. It's always in Chicago. It's always good to go the next step west. You may have to wait a while for things to catch up to you, but now that really essentially the entire lakefront on the north side is expensive, you just have to go in a little bit.
How about near, if you come in closer on the west side, in fact, just West Loop, River West, that area, those prices still really, really high?
Oh, my gosh, West Loop. When you talk about short inventory, the West Loop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to find. There's a lot of construction going on. So they're, you know, working to resolve that loss of inventory or lack of inventory. But yeah, tight over there. Those are some pretty great areas. But they've been sort of building and building for really a couple of decades. People started getting over to River West after River North got moving. So you're looking at since the 90s, those two places have been going, but they are white hot now. I mean, now, you know, when you walk the streets of the West Loop, you're in a dense built-up neighborhood, and it's only 20 years ago that you could have rolled a bowling ball down the middle of a lot of those streets.
It's true. I remember when I lived in Albany Park for a little while, and I guess, Dennis, I keep moving west. I was in Albany Park for a little while, and when I was living there, at that time was when everything was going down with Blago, and he lived about half a mile away from where I lived. And that was an area that was really going up in prices and at that time. And that was right before the bust or right around the bust.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, Albany Park was pretty hard hit by the bust because one of the things that was happening most there was conversion of apartments to condominiums. And a lot of those then sat unsold after the bust. So Albany Park had a couple of years. We all had a couple of years, but they were pretty dark for Albany Park because there was just a ton of foreclosure. But it's starting to turn. It's starting to come back.
It's funny, Dennis. It's not funny because I ended up when I was living in Albany Park, I had a condo with my ex-wife, and it was under her name, and I ended up leaving, and then she couldn't get the condo sold. And it was right in the heart of Albany Park, couldn't get it sold. So there was justice.
It was rampant up there for a while.
Okay. Dennis, thanks a lot for joining us. I really appreciate it. And people can check you out
at
Cranes. Is there a website?
ChicagoBusiness.com.
ChicagoBusiness.com. Dennis, pleasure talking to you. Thank you for joining us this morning, and have a great one, okay?
See you again.
All right, there you go. Dennis Rodkin covers real estate for Cranes. Okay, listen, we got a big story coming up. Vic is going to tell you about it. It's the state of the state today. We're going to hear from Rauner and the mayor, and that's your big story coming up in just a few minutes.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:36. Welcome back to the program on The Opening Bell today, our weekly chat with Scott Catoon of this Tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Radio and WGN Plus. He is a Chicago entrepreneur and has close ties to 1871. We like to talk about startups and tech trends and innovation. And Scott is with us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Scott. Welcome to The Opening Bell again.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.
Glad to get up. Glad you got up this morning and were able to join us. You guys got 1871. There was a guest VIP there yesterday and brought a check along. Tell us about it.
So the treasurer was in 1871 yesterday and announced that the state of Illinois is planning to invest $220 million in state funds, into state venture funds over the next 3 years. It's the first time that they've done this since 2003. So it's going to be controversial. It hasn't really, you know, there's a bunch of news outlets have published this yesterday and today. There's a little controversy here because obviously with the budget, the state businesses are not, you know, real happy right now. So the idea that they're opening up $220 million towards early stage companies, I think, could cause a little bit of a ruckus.
Now, the money, you specifically said it was a venture fund. So this is not like it's coming out of the state general fund.
Correct.
Tell us about where this money is going to be coming from.
Yeah. So, well, where the actual money is coming from, I'm not 100% versed on, but where the money is going, I can give you an example of when they did this last time in 2003. They used essentially 1% of the state's investment portfolio into venture capital and private equity firms. What it essentially did was helped launch technology development accounts, a TDA. And what that invested money in was Spot Hero, Trunk Club, Sitter City, Diagnostic Photonics. I mean, numerous companies that in Chicago are essentially what we call in the tech industry the staple of the first original Chicago startups.
So I'm guessing that, again, I don't know the specifics of where that money came from either, but I would suspect that you and I have our portfolios, we have our investments, other businesses like the state have their investments, and they're going to just take some of that comeback off of that if they're making money off those investments.
Yep.
As they probably are, hopefully, in the state of Illinois. So this money then is going to be used to do what? It generated all these jobs, right?
4,000 jobs. I mean, we are hoping that this time it's even more. I mean, I'm trying to think of the Spot Hero CEO Mark Lawrence. He actually said that they had been responsible for 80 employees as a result of that original investment, and they're hiring another 33 positions now. What is interesting about this and what is different, I think, than what some people in state businesses might be afraid of is that these are really fast-growing companies. It's one thing to invest in a slow, more non-agile company. This is a company that literally could turn into a billion-dollar company quite literally overnight.
And the other thing, too, is if you look at it from the standpoint of startups and innovators, only the second time since 2003, that really doesn't sound like a lot of investment by the state in this area.
No, it's not. I mean, and keep in mind, you know, when they invested in 2003, that was over another 3 year period. And then when they actually started preparing this, it was 2011. Mm-hmm. So this has been in the works for, you know, years. The state moves really quickly, obviously.
and you guys, it's one thing to give money to, let's say, like a brick and mortar company that's been here forever. And I'm sure the state does in other ways, right? I mean, there are tax breaks and
grants and all kinds of things.
Right. So tell me about how important this kind of money is for a company like.
Well, it's super important because, I mean, most of these companies are pre-revenue. So we don't have a lot of our investments and stuff. We don't really have revenue coming in like a normal traditional brick and mortar that can count on building and hiring people. We rely heavily on this venture capital funds to be able to invest in our own infrastructure and our growth. And the reality is a lot of these tech companies, the technology is the future, and all businesses, brick and mortar and, you know, alike, all have to rely on technology. These are many of the companies that come out of Chicago tech startups are actually helping B2B companies. So this is something that it's an investment that helps Chicago economy grow. It helps our tech economy grow, but it also helps the state of Illinois economy grow because these tech startups may well impact the way that Illinois businesses develop.
Did you get a sense of that from the state treasurer yesterday when he was there in his remarks? Did he give you that the state was all in on this?
Yeah, I mean, it was glowing. I mean, it's always that way when they come in, right? I mean, all the press conferences are. Have you ever been to a bad one? I mean, I guess I have been to a bad one. But
a few, yeah.
They were glowing. They were at 1871. Howard Tolman was there. Everyone was very excited about it. I mean, all the startup companies actually came out of their little holes and sort of piled around to listen to it because anytime the state says we're going to get behind something and invest a lot of money, It's a big deal.
Yeah. Our producer, Mary Sandberg, is joining us at the microphone. Mary?
In speculation on where some of those funds are coming from, I know some. I was reading in Chicago Business Today, a lot of the biggest trading companies have spun off venture capital endeavors, and so they're pouring a ton of money into the local economy.
Yeah, there was actually a recent article, it might even be the same one you're referring to, talking about a lot of the major traders are just now getting into this venture fund area. And I know a handful of them. Sean Baldwin is one of them from AIA. He's former financial spokesperson for BlackBerry. There's a lot of Chicago traders who are getting involved in this, so it's a big deal.
So, Scott, tell us what else is going on these days over in the startup community.
Well, last week we talked about the Technori event, the business-to-business Technori mm-hmm. event, which I think goes right into this very well, considering we're talking about Illinois businesses, right? Last night was the event. I'm a little tired because we were there until fairly late last night. But two companies I think you should really keep an eye on. One is Tribe.do. It's a task management platform. They did an outstanding job. We had guys from Underwriter Laboratory there. They seemed very impressed by them. And the other one that is literally, if I had to predict any startup to be the next billion-dollar startup that's like tiny, Akuba Credit. Okay. AKA, I don't know how to spell the rest of it, but unbelievable. It's quite literally one of the best presentations I've ever seen.
And if you weren't with us on the opening bell when we talked about this last week, Technori is sort of the place where you don't know when you go there who's going to be the next big thing. And then, you know, a couple of years later, you're like, I was at the big thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Give us an idea of who's been there and where they've been. I mean,
some of the startups we just mentioned, Spot Hero, Grubhub, Sitter City, Trunk Club, they've all been on Technori. I mean, it's essentially what Technori puts itself to be is the place where startups launch, Chicago anyway.
It's the sort of like the nest.
It's right? referred to as TED. It's the TEDx for startups in Chicago, and they've got a couple in Atlanta, and they're now international. But it's a fantastic event, but they're now starting to actually hit on more segmented things like B2B.
Mm-hmm. The ecosystem is healthy, would you give it? Because today we're doing sort of this theme of the state of the fill in the blank. I mean, the governor's doing the state of the state. What is the state of the ecosystem in Chicago for startups and innovation?
Well, of course, we need more money, and there's always more. You always want more of everything, right? More talent, more money, more experiences. But the reality is, if you look back on 2015, it's the best year for raising money, the best year for launching startups in Chicago's history, I believe. And I think 2016 is positioning itself to be probably even better.
Do you obviously you're going to get questions about this grant or this money continually through the week, because there are a lot of companies and the state of Illinois' financial situation is not optimum. Do you tell them, hey, listen, this is the future. How are these startups going to be hurt by this? Because you would imagine that if questions like that continue, it could hurt some of these companies, right?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Startup companies, by their very nature, at least the successful ones, entrepreneurs as well, are very thick-skinned. So the idea of like the cards stacked against you is sort of like, that's an old story for most of us. So honestly, I don't think most, and I don't recommend most of those startup companies spend a whole lot of time worrying about this. I think they should worry about what they're doing and focus on building a good business, because reality is investors, state included, will always invest in a good idea that has actual potential.
And it doesn't necessarily depend on the ecosystem, right? I mean, if there's a good idea, if there's a good place, a good business, the ecosystem really doesn't matter, does it?
I think it does. The only thing I would say that it does impact is that when you have a good surrounding of people and talent and things, I think they do a really nice job of propelling people. All boats rise, so to speak.
Right. Okay, well, we're talking with Scott Catoon of Tomorrow in Business Today on WGN Plus. And Scott, you want to stick around for our next segment?
Sure.
We're going to take a break and tell you about traffic. Mary Vandeville standing by. Mary, how are the roads moving this morning?
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:48. The futures markets indicating what could be a lower open on Wall Street later today. The Dow futures are off 63 points at 16,003. The S&P futures are off about 12 this hour at 1884. Overseas in Europe, a mixed market. Most of the markets saw positive gains, except for the Shanghai, which was off. The Nikkei is up 455 right now in Europe, where the markets are still trading. The FTSE is off about 30 points. Let's get a look at some of the commodity prices now, and here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, It's been a busy traveling week, returning late yesterday from Minot, North Dakota, where I had the opportunity to meet with and speak to the Northern Pulse Growers Association. No, that's not a medical heart association. It's a crop, a legume crop that nearly all of us consume at one time or another. Chickpeas, lentils, yellow peas, all under the label of pulses. And it's a growing industry for American farmers because in the 23 years that the association has been in existence, the export market particularly has strengthened a great deal. Now, let's look at livestock trade yesterday because, once again, the stock market influencing the cattle market. We saw that yesterday. Stocks, higher move, bringing live cattle futures higher for the day. Investors selling deferred months, buying the February contract with a view that it's undervalued in advance of expectations for cash prices later in the week. So cattle prices yesterday, the April contract up 70 cents for the day, and the January feeder cattle contract up 72 cents for the day. Today, it's off to San Diego, California, the annual meeting of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We'll be there for the next couple of days, visiting with cattle producers from all over the country. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, thanks, Orion. And we learned something new today, Scott. What was it? Pulses. I never knew that that was what, you know, you drew all of those legumes and other things in.
Nobody calls me about agriculture.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. So we've been talking with Scott Catoon about the state of innovation in Chicago and this explosion of money yesterday. I shouldn't call it an explosion because you could always take more, right?
Always take more.
Yeah, yeah. But it is nice that the state is thinking about this, right?
I think it's important. I mean, obviously, in the now, we love it, of course. But really, I think the people who appreciate it is in the future. 4,000 jobs, if we can duplicate what happened the last time they did it, which I think we will, and then some, you know, I think that's a big deal in a couple of years.
Has the date been set yet for the next Technoria? What should people be putting on their calendars if they miss this one?
Yep, the last Thursday of each month. So approximately 4 weeks from today, there'll be another one. It'll be the 51st, the second of this year.
Okay. I'm marking that on my calendar here because I want to make sure we get that done. What else can be on our radar screen this week as we move through
this week? I think a couple of things are kind of cool. There's a whole bunch of events, obviously. One place that I think, you know, if people are really interested in supporting veterans, the one place that I would check out is, again, at 1871, although they're all over the nation, is Bunker Labs. This is an accelerator that is totally devoted to helping veterans who want to become entrepreneurs sort of get assimilated and get their businesses launched. They have events every single week, one that they call Epic. It's on Wednesday nights. And you can volunteer. If you're a business person, you can come in and volunteer and help sort of lend your advice and your expertise to veterans.
Yesterday on the program, if you were with us, we talked about how important it is to market your ideas. We spoke specifically, I'll get it out, about blogs and that sort of thing. But how important is it for some of these innovators that you deal with that are in your circles to market themselves? You said they came out of their holes yesterday to see the treasure because they're always focused on that work that they're doing. But how much marketing do they do and how important is that in that ecosystem?
Yeah, so actually, this is funny you said this. At the Technoria event yesterday, one of the companies actually quoted said marketing was evil because of how much money it costs and how much time it consumes in order to do it. I think that every young entrepreneur has to learn the art of salesmanship. And in this day and age, with a technology product, salesmanship takes place digitally online. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of room for improvement, for sure. But I think that the importance of having your own brand and having a blog and a mic is a podcast or a vodcast. I think it's very important to put a face to what you're doing.
And you do a good job of that for them. But we were having this discussion after our listening to Sujan Patel yesterday from entrepreneur.com. You can find his article there about just how many there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's Instagram, there's Pinterest, there are all of these things. And then the new Snapchat, all of this stuff, it can suck you down into the hole of time if you don't get a handle on it. And that, you know, it makes me wonder how hard it is. That just adds another like couple of pounds to what these people are carrying around in the startup world.
Oh, absolutely. And to make matters worse, if you choose to link all of those accounts and have one single post that goes across it, that is a mortal sin.
Yes.
People do not like that. So, but one solution to this is a thing called Medium.com, which is essentially a place where you can post your own blog, host your own blog, and it's become very, very popular among the kind of techno class.
Yeah.
And that's one thing where I think that a lot of people can save some time is hopping on Medium and just make that their go-to.
It is. It's sort of, you know what it reminds me of? It's sort of an online technori in a way.
It is. It absolutely is.
Because you have all of these great minds who are posting to that. So if you follow Medium and you get on Medium and just watch, you'll see from week to week that that's where that happens.
Oh, absolutely. And the good ones end up getting pulled over to Inc. and Entrepreneur.com and other things like that. So, I mean, there are places.
Okay, Scott Catoon, it is tomorrow's Business Today on WGN Radio, WGN Plus. You can find Scott at TBT on WGN. You do a great job, by the way, of promoting these folks.
Thank you so much.
They should be paying you a lot.
I agree.
Money. Scott, thanks for being with us. Thanks for getting up this morning. Have a great day, and good luck to all these startups.
You too. Thank you, Steve.
All right. Join us March 10th at the Economist Innovation Forum 2016, held at Four Seasons Hotel, with the editors of The Economist, Fortune 500 CEOs, and policymakers. We'll envision the company of the future. What do today's companies need to achieve, transform, and flourish? It's all coming up again on the 10th of March. Mark your calendar, the Economist Innovation Forum 2016 at the Four Seasons Hotel. That's our program for today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Production help from Ross Cochran and Kevin Powell. Our engineer, Ben Cortez. Thanks to Dave Ennett and also Nick DiGilio for filling in for the first half of the show. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the Opening Bell. Steve Cochran is coming up next. It's 5:55 on WGN.